This is the official Euro 2024 podcast.
Portugal are through to the round of 16 as group winners, securing their spot in impressive fashion.
Here's Cristiano Ronaldo. It's a great chance for 3-0, and it's walked up by Bruno Fernandes. Turkish defence undone.
In the same section, Georgia come close to a first ever major tournament win, but it's a point in the end against Czechia. Elsewhere, Belgium are up and running.
Doku, Lukaku, laid off for Tielemans. It's in! What a start for Belgium!
And we'll look ahead to Sunday's games as Group A concludes. Scotland meet Hungary and the hosts Germany face Switzerland. Hello and welcome to the Euro Show. With Chris and I tonight is European football expert Alvaro Romeo. And Alvaro, Belgium 2-0 winners against Romania. A needed victory for Domenico Tedesco and his side.
Definitely, they did it. I think that it was a very good display by them. They scored two goals. Romelu Lukaku had another one disallowed. The manager did the needed changes just to turn the situation around. Four changes in relation to the team that couldn't beat Slovakia. And a very refreshing win for the Belgians, who are now in the right channel, I believe, that they've got a very good chance of qualifying for the next round. But of course, they need points for the next game.
Full time about 10 minutes ago, and there are still lots of Belgium supporters. We can see the scenes inside the Cologne Stadium, still there, still cheering. Yuri Tielemans went up to them at the end and kind of led the celebrations. There was then a team talk in the middle of the pitch by Domenico Tedesco. You could see what this meant to Belgium. This section now, quite extraordinarily ahead of the final game. All four teams on 3 points, which is going to be brilliant from a dramatic point of view. And also, interesting, Rob, ahead of the final match day of the group stage, only three teams are currently through. Germany, Spain and now Portugal. Really is everything to play for between now and Wednesday when the group stage comes to an end.
So much to get into tonight. A reminder, the show is live on Euro 2024's website and the app every night. Plus, it's a podcast if you need to catch up.
It is, and we want you to get in touch on the day's action as well via X. Do message us using at Euro 2024.
Okay, let's start with Group F, in fact, on a decisive day. In a moment, we'll talk about the 1-1 draw between Georgia and Czechia from earlier, but that result meant that by the time Turkey and Portugal kicked off, both teams knew a win would see them top their group with both sets of fans in full voice before kickoff.
Nuno Mendes forward, just in behind Vitinha. Great chance, 1-0. It is about to change because Portugal break the deadlock. Bernardo Silva. Well, one back by João Cancelo. Great determination. And the ball going in the opposite direction to Ronaldo. Has he gone in? It's going to be an own goal. Here's Cristiano Ronaldo. It's a great chance for 3-0. And it's walked up by Bruno Fernandes. Turkish defence undone.
Simon Brotherton on commentary there. Alvaro, Portugal 3-0 winners. Have they lived up to their billing as one of the pre-tournament favourites?
I think so. They've been good, especially today. I think the goal difference they've got tells a little bit of the story, really. A plus four after two games, 6 points. Today, they had a terrific display of efficiency, 3 shots on target, 3 goals. I believe that they are a team that plays with the composure that you get when you win games month after month. At the end of the day, they have won 15 of their last 17 international games. And I did like what Portugal offered, because they knew that the business today was crossing balls. Not necessarily to Cristiano Ronaldo, who's the target man, but crossing balls to the second post. Bernardo Silva scored the first goal exactly from a cross. Crossing balls to Leao, to Cristiano Ronaldo, to players who were coming from the midfield as well. And it was a very good victory. 3-0, fully deserved, I believe, for the Portuguese. And generally speaking, I would say that it was also a very good night for Bernardo Silva as well, or afternoon for Bernardo, because he had never scored in a Euro, and today he got his maiden goal in a European tournament.
A good win in Dortmund. Let's head there now and speak to our Portugal correspondent, Carlos Machado. Carlos, thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Rob. Thank you, Chris.
Well, first of all, how impressive, how expected is it that Portugal are through as group winners with a game to spare?
I guess this is running according to plan. Honestly, Portugal knew when they were drawn in this group F that they basically would have to win all the three games, or you know, or at least to win the group. And that goal was achieved, I guess, with thing that is called natural, because against Czechia, they struggled a bit against a side with a low block, quite a resilient one, defending quite well. They were lucky in the end, but that's how it is. When you have good players, you are always closer to score than to win. And today, it was also a bit expected because Turkey, we all saw against Georgia that they would play in a more open way because they are a side that also likes to have the ball, also likes to play. And they gave us a lot of spaces at the back. So, and the goals, of course, that second goal made it easier for us. But yeah, at the end, I think we did what we were supposed to do, basically.
And can we talk about these two players who are still performing? One at the age of 39, Cristiano Ronaldo, and one at 41 in Pepe. How are they still doing this?
Yeah, impressive. Both. Perhaps more Pep, because apart from having two more years than Ronaldo, he has struggled a bit with injuries this entire season. But when he's called, he's impressive. The way he plays, the way he runs, the way he gives the example, the way he is so welcomed in the group, the way he pushes for the others. And on pitch, impressive. You don't honestly, if you didn't know who Pep was, you wouldn't give him 41. And Ronaldo is more or less the same. He's quite he's different from Qatar. I was also in the World Cup, and this Ronaldo is physically better now than he was in 2022. And the third goal, he could have easily scored him by himself, but he rather passed the ball to Bruno to score, which is a proof that he's quite with the team, and I believe this is very good for Portugal.
In the first game, Roberto Martinez surprised people with the formation, playing three central defenders. They switched for this game. Why did they, Carlos? And what did you see from that different system?
Yeah, Portugal has this sort of capacity with the quality they have in the squad to play in different tactics, different systems, and with players in either wing or something like that. I guess Roberto Martinez didn't want to be surprised in the first game, because the first game in a competition, if for some reason goes wrong, could be a problem. But we knew that against Turkey, he would definitely go back to the four-line defender, because he will have to field another midfielder. That was today Palhinha, to give more balance to the team and to give more freedom to Bernardo and Bruno to be closer to the attackers. This sort of system against teams that don't defend that low, like Czechia did, this is clearly a better solution. And I think for the future, I guess, he will continue to play with this static of four.
Carlos, thanks for joining us not long after full time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Rob. Thank you, Chris. Was a pleasure.
Our Portugal correspondent, Carlos Machado, speaking there. Chris, speaking glowingly about Ronaldo's impact on this team.
Yeah, he was fantastic on the pitch. And also there was an adorable moment before the game began. We see it with mascots quite a bit, but this one, it really was a melt-in-your-heart moment. A little girl, I'm going to say she was five or six maybe, kind of stood, turned around, realised that she was the one in front of Ronaldo, looked up in complete and utter awe at him, and then kind of went to her friend next to her, gave her a little tug, little giggle, hand over the mouse, looked at Ronaldo again. He then gave her a nice smile. She was, I mean, kind of life made at that stage. And then he gave her a hug at the end and she ran off with her friend. It was genuinely one of those moments outside of the football when you're, you can't help not be kind of just glowing after looking at something like that.
A good day for Portugal. They did some interesting things with that formation switch, bringing in João Paulinho. We know the strength in their squad and we don't doubt they'll rotate, of course, for that final group game. But let's switch things up to Turkey. A disappointing result from them. Let's hear from their midfielder, Ferdi Kadıoğlu.
Yeah, the last game we had more the ball than this game. Of course, Portugal is a great team. They played good with the ball. They gave us some troubles, but yeah, our mistakes were the problem today, and hopefully the next game we will do it better. I have all the hope in the team and trust the team, and next game we'll do much better.
Alvaro, this was always going to be a difficult game for Turkey, not helped by the fact that they were missing some of the players who had been so good in their opening win against Georgia.
Yeah, for example, I believe that Arda Güler was 100% physically apt for the game against Portugal, for example. But I think that Turkey wasn't bad. I do believe that Portugal was too good. They stretched the game a lot. They sent Rafael Leao and Bernardo Silva to the wings. So they stretched the pitch so much that sometimes for Turkey was very difficult to handle with all that. But I do believe that also they are always staying in the game. They always are capable of creating chances. They go for real for the duels. And I don't forget that after Portugal scored the second, it was an own goal by Turkey, Aktürk Koglu right away had a chance to score the 2-1, cut the deficit a little bit and put Turkey in the game again. That didn't happen. And now in the third game against Czechia, they will have to do their best to make sure that they are in the next round.
And we had another fabulous sign, Alvaro. I need to get your opinion on this one. Started off with the Swiss, which was fondue is better than goulash. Today, we had perhaps an impossible one. Baklava is better than pastel de nata.
You know what happened? That pastel de nata is going to be my choice.
Good.
Because I had one last Monday. And it's still fresh in my mind, really. There is a Portuguese bakery, an excellent one, not far from where I live. And yeah, I'm gonna stick to that. But, all due respect to baklava, which, by the way, is one of the best things you can have in Turkey, really. But Turkey's food is excellent too.
That was, you said that like a manager, and all full respect to baklava, of course.
Absolutely.
But I'm going for pastel de nata, really. It has to be, doesn't it, Chris? Okay, let's switch things up to the other game in the group, Chris.
Yes, remember this section was pretty fascinatingly poised. We've mentioned the result, but in the earlier game in Group F, Georgia faced Czechia, and we were treated, Rob, to a fantastic goalkeeping display by Georgi Mamardashvili.
Looking for the skipper, didn't find him, and punched over the top eventually by Mamardashvili. And again, the goalkeeper's there to punch clear. Relentless period of pressure on Czechia. It's come right the way through to the skipper, who has been denied by Stanik. But Daniel Sibert is going to have a look at the pitch side monitor. Penalty awarded. Superbly struck. George Mikutadze edges Georgia in front. Off the post and eventually bundled in. Patrick Schick grabs the equaliser for Czechia.
Tony Jones on commentary there. This was another compelling game. Czechia had more than 10 shots on target. No wonder that Mamardashvili was the player of the match. You heard his double save. Georgia's Mikadadze then put Georgia ahead on half-time from the spot. Remember this, Rob, their first ever major tournament. You could feel the stadium, that history was there for Georgia to take. But Czechia equalised through Patrick Schick, another Euro goal for him. We'll get on to him in a moment. He then went off injured, and in the last kick, Georgia had the chance to win it. Saba Ljubljanica threw on goal in front of the Georgia fans, and he fired over the bar. And there was kind of a collective from that end sort of groan and a feeling of what might have been. They're still in a good position in this section, but we might have been talking tonight about the greatest football victory in Georgian footballing history.
It was an extraordinary late dramatic moment for a for a Georgia side that have been extremely competitive so far.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Chris has explained very well how the game went. Even I would say that the fact that Mamardashvili was called the MVP of the game says a little bit about how many chances Czechia had. But the best thing about Georgia is that if they get dominated, they will assume it as a part of the game. I think that they are never too surprised about it. They are never too depressed about it. I mean, they are the leaders in the Euros in balls recovered, which is really good, 91 balls recovered. And then they charge forward so well. I mean, Kvaratskhelia can carry the ball, and he does it very well. By the way, he almost picked an injury in the warm-up ahead of the game, but then he lasted 82-84 minutes, so good for him. And then the players who do the running with him, they are so fast as well. They are so fast, and they always manage to get to shooting positions. And that chance that Lovjanice had in the last minute could have killed it off for them. Unfortunately for Georgia, that didn't happen. But, you know, this is a team that stays in the game no matter what. And one thing that I like about them is that if Kvaratskhelia is not there, or if he is not at his 100%, the team still responds. I remember that they qualified in the playoffs for the tournament. In the semifinals, Kvaratskhelia wasn't available. And then in the final, he was against Greece. But Georgia knows how to win without him. So this is a team that has some, you know, stars and some great players aside from their biggest man. And this is something that Willy Sagnol could be could treasure, and he can really feel very proud about it.
Two games now, Rob, and both times that Georgia have played, you've switched on your phone or you've gone on social media, and people who are not fans of Georgia have been captivated by the matches they've been involved in right until the very last kick. And whether they go through ultimately to the last 16 or not, they've definitely left their footprint all over this Euro 2024.
To check in now, and our reporter Andre Schlemel spoke to their captain Tomáš Souček after the game.
Obviously, we are disappointed. We wanted more from this game. We wanted 3 points and go through the group. But now we got the points. We had many chances and we should score, and then we conceded from the penalties. So it's tough for us, but we are still in the game, and we know that we need to go for last game of the tournament with the win. It will be a great game by fans, because Turkey and Czechia are like top at the tournaments by fans, and hopefully we bring them 3 points and we will go through the group.
That is their final group opposition, Turkey, when we look ahead to their match on the 26th of June. But you wanted to mention Patrick Schick, Alvaro, because he, perhaps not as glamorous as his halfway line goal against Scotland at the last Euro, he kind of bundled it over the line, but a notable one for the striker.
Yeah, definitely, and a very important number for him. 6 goals in Euros for Patrick Schick. He's got one more than Milan Baros right now, which makes him the top scorer of the Czechia in this tournament. So that's a fantastic number for a very good striker.
And his goals per game ratio in Euro history, just to add to that stat, he is second behind only Michel Platini. 7 in 6, or 6 in 7, I should say. Pretty extraordinary numbers for Patrick Schick.
And a couple of names that will be hearing about in the next years. One of them, we know him very well, is Chufal, the player from West Ham United. He's the leader in crosses in the Euros, at least before Belgium and Romania played against each other. I have to update that. And then another one that Girona signed this summer is Krejci. He will be probably playing in the Champions League, and he's the defender that has impressed me the most in the Euros, at least in this group, because he's been playing so well for the Czechs.
Yeah, a superb goal-scoring defender, as well as he was in Europe for Sparta Praha this season. Chris, quickly the standings and the fixtures for the final round of games here.
So Portugal on 6 points. We know they're through as section winners. Turkey behind them on 3. Then come Czechia and Georgia. And on the 26th of June, Georgia face Portugal. Czechia, Turkey. Everything to play for behind the section winners.
Coming up, we'll look back on Belgium versus Romania. And we touch on the day's other stories at Euro 2024.
Few major competitions do more than the Euros to ensure their benefits last far beyond the final tournament. Since 2004, our hat-trick programme has been distributing two-thirds of every Euro's net revenue across Europe's 55 football associations to fund development projects. These benefits touch every level of the football pyramid. In communities, it pays for mini pitches, grassroots club development, football in schools, and disability football projects. At the top, hat-trick has helped associations build more than 60 stadiums and training centres. Euro 2024 will build on more than 800 projects already delivered over 20 years of hat-trick. Over the next 4 years, 935 million euros of the tournament's revenue will help leave a lasting legacy across the continent.
A reminder to download the official Euro 2024 app if you haven't already. Our in-camp team reporters are providing you with the team news you need, perhaps, for your fantasy football team. Chris, where next?
Group E, let's react to that game in Cologne where Belgium took on Romania.
Doku, Lukaku, laid off for Tielemans. It's in! What a start for Belgium! That's come through here for De Bruyne.
And he was player of the match as well. We'll get to Kevin De Bruyne in a moment. Belgium coming into this game, remember, off the back of that defeat to Slovakia, but they could bring in more familiar names. Players returning from injury, Tayat, Vertonghen, Yuri Tielemans were all in, along with Todi Lukubakio into that attack. And 73 seconds in, they scored their fastest ever Euro goal, Alvaro.
Yeah, for them, which is really, really, really impressive. And, you know, the decision of Domenico Tedesco of starting Yuri Tielemans paid dividends from the very beginning. I mean, Tedesco knew that changes were needed, so the likes of Lukebakio, Vertonghen, Tiet, as you said, and Tielemans came in, and I think they proved their worth. Then Romelu Lukaku and Kevin De Bruyne show that they have this great connection carved over the years. Romelu Lukaku has been probably the unlucky man of the tournament. It's been a matter of inches. Yeah. A matter of inches that he hasn't scored 3 goals in the tournament, but the 3 of them, which in all fairness he put in the net, were disallowed. But his connection with his fellow Belgian is excellent, and Kevin De Bruyne is playing in that number 10 position that probably now, in this stage of his career, suits him best. In fact, he scored today, and I think it was a good convincing performance by the Belgian side. I believe that they needed a proper booster, and this is definitely the kind of result that that can propel them forward in this tournament.
You could see it at full time what it meant to them. During the 90 minutes, you mentioned some of their key players there who were able to really cause Romania problems. Did you sense there was almost a collective thought amongst Belgium and their top players that, okay, match one did not go according to plan. This is the night that we lay down a marker.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess that it has to be a little bit annoying for them to read everywhere that the golden generation is gone, and you know that maybe the new generation doesn't live up to the expectations or to their past. But in all fairness, some of the old generation still remains there. Some of the new additions are excellent. I really think that Leandro Trossard, Luke Bacchio, players who are not that young, but they didn't play obviously in the past because the likes of Eden Hazard were there. They really want to prove their worth. And yes, I would say that today there was a mission there, and there was a belief as well. This is a side that at the end of the day, they were fantastic in the qualifying process, and they know that they can resort to the type of game and the type of mentality that they had over the last year just to negotiate situations like this, which are very tricky, by the way, because Romania came into this game with a lot of belief after, probably being the surprise of the tournament so far, beating Ukraine 3-0.
Alvaro, I wanted to ask you about Koen Casteels, who also picked up an assist, the Belgian goalkeeper, yeah, as part of his performance.
Well, I believe that he probably needed a performance like this. At the end of the day, Thibaut Courtois is not in the squad, and he's possibly one of the best goalkeepers in the last 20 years. But one thing that I like about him is the fact that he doesn't drop to any side before the shot gets taken, if that makes sense. So he waits very well, and then when the ball takes a certain direction, he flies to that direction and he normally makes the save. Today he kept a clean sheet, and I think he started setting the tone very quickly in the game after he, just with his fingers, he palmed out a very good header by Burka, and after that he's been oozing with confidence, and I think he's been a very important player for the Belgians today.
Edwards Iordanescu speaking just a few moments ago, actually saying, "I have full trust in our team," and at 1-0, They had a couple of major chances, Romania, where they could have levelled the game. And, of course, had they got a point, they would have moved on to...
They opened up Belgium,
they
didn't
did.
They, Chris?
Yeah, and a point or more. And they might have been celebrating going through tonight. So you can understand why he's still pretty confident.
And one thing that has happened in these Euros is that transitions have been part of pretty much every game, with the exception, perhaps, of Spain-Italy... and Germany-Scotland that they can think of. But every side, even if they get dominated, and we spoke before about Georgia being the team that suffered today but still recovered the ball and was charging forward. But many sides do this very well, and Romania is one of them. For example, today they knew that they were going to suffer at some point, that they knew about the quality of the Belgian side. Sometimes they have to drop deep, defend deep. But then when they go forward in 3-4 passes, they manage to send the ball there to the opponent's box. And this is a characteristic that I have seen in many sides in this Euro, and Romania is one of those. Even if they don't have the ball, in a split second, they can trigger a counter-attack.
A reminder as well that this group couldn't be better poised really getting into the final game, Chris.
No, I mean, all four teams are on 3 points, which you kind of have to reread again.
Has that happened before?
No, that has never happened before at this stage of a group stage. So with one game to play, it is Romania on top, then come Belgium, then come Slovakia, then come Ukraine. We've spoken about in the history since this expansion that if you get 4 points, it's normally enough, or it has always been enough to go through as one of the best third-ranked teams. Well, there is a potential that all four teams could have 4 points at the end. It's going to be impossible to work out the permutations. I won't ask you now, Alvaro. But in terms of the final game on Wednesday, Slovakia, Romania, Ukraine, Belgium, every goal will mean something, not just for the two teams playing, but for all four of these nations as they vie for the two or maybe three spots. Who
Can
knows?
I put Alvaro on the spot then? Wednesday, 26th of June, Slovakia versus Romania, Ukraine versus Belgium. Who's going through, Alvaro?
Look, there is a unified schedule, as you said. Both games are played simultaneously. So what happens in one game is going to influence straight away the other, you know? So I think that whoever scores first here is going to have such a tremendous advantage. So it's very difficult for me to say, but obviously the easy answer could be the team with the biggest stars and the most qualified stars will probably have more chances of qualifying. But on the other hand, maybe today Romania was not as good as they were against Ukraine, but we can see that Romania again playing against against Slovakia the next day. So we can see Stanciu, scoring from 25 meters with a lovely screamer. So it's very difficult for me to put my bet on somebody, but I will say that Belgium, obviously, after winning this game and after all we have said, they may have the upper hand because today's performance has been a statement.
I thought you were going to have a go there, Chris. You kept waving your hand.
I was waving my hand because I was thinking, is Alvaro going to name a nation? It's a very difficult question.
All right, here's mine. Belgium win their game. Slovakia, Romania is a draw. And all three of those teams go through.
Okay.
That's my prediction.
Belgium as well. And I think I've seen enough of Romania now to suggest that they may actually win the game. We could, of course, all three be very wrong. That is the glory of this group, genuinely.
Well, us being wrong, absolutely.
Yeah, you
right.
can make a huge case for all four going through.
Yeah, but the quality is everywhere because what about Jarenčuk's goal the other day?
Oh, it's gorgeous.
I mean, it's one of my favorite goals of the tournament as well, you know, and Jarenčuk is a player that at the beginning of the tournament, it looked like Artem Dobik was going to be the number nine of the team for the 90 minutes. And suddenly, the tournament goes around, things happen, and the managers change their minds, and some players that look a little bit peripheral, suddenly they become important. So that's why I'm saying that it's very, very difficult to predict anything. But of course, Belgium, with the goalkeeper like Castells, who today has shown that he's ready for this, a striker like Romelu Lukaku, who has had 3 goals disallowed, but he's scoring the goals, and Kevin De Bruyne in this form, of course, I think that Belgium is the favourite to finish top.
What I love about this section, though, is when the draw was made, people, I think, pointed to Group B. Oh, there's Spain and Italy in there. Group D, there's Austria, France and the Netherlands. I wonder how many pointed to Group E and thought that's where the drama might come. It will come in most sections, I think, but this one may be the most compelling going into that third and final match day.
Some big games to preview as Group A concludes. But first, here is your Day 9 Euro headlines. A Aymeric Laporte reveals he'd barely trained before starting Spain's 1-0 win over Italy. The centre-back, coming back from injury, was needed at late notice after Nacho picked up a muscle problem. "I'd not played for quite some time," said Laporte, admitting he'd been suffering with a fever too when first linking up with the squad. Spain, meanwhile, have a fresh injury concern, with Ayoze Perez a doubt for the Albania game.
England goalkeeper Jordan Pickford's been heaping praise on Mark Gay ahead of their final group game. The defender is making his final tournament's debut at this Euro after an injury to Harry Maguire ruled him out.
I played Mark before, previously when Harry's been injured before, and he comes in every game, he's steady, away, he's calm, he's confident, he does his job, and that's what you want. In front of your lad, do a job, be a solid centre-half, and he'll put his body on the line for you. And there was no question marks over Mark fitting in nicely, because he's a top lad and he's a top player.
England face Slovenia on Tuesday. They will be through to the last 16 if they avoid defeat.
The goal of the round for match day one went to Turkey's Mert Mulder.
Promise here, and a shot blasted high into the roof of the net. Mert Mulder with a blockbuster of a goal for Turkey, who are up and running at Euro 2024.
Yes, that sumptuous volley against Georgia got more votes than Arda Güler's wonder strike in the same game, Nikolai Stanciu's goal against Ukraine, and Nicolò Barella's finish against Albania. It won't be long until the shortlist for the match day two goal of the round will be revealed.
And you might have seen the pictures of Yasir Asani's Super Mario boots after Albania's match against Croatia. They went viral, and the winger's been talking about them before his nation's crunch game with Spain. He says he had them designed for 6 or 7 months and decided that Croatia was the special occasion to wear them, adding this: "Maybe my boots are more famous at the Euro than I am now."
He might be right, actually, at the moment. But they did look pretty cool.
They did. And he's got time to put that right, in fairness.
He certainly does. OK, let's have a look ahead to a massive day in Group A. There are only two matches on Sunday, but drama is guaranteed.
Slipped by Toni Kroos, but he still delivers a pinwheel pass. Space for Fiat! What a save by Martin off the post! And Germany, inside 10 minutes, lights the fuse to illuminate Euro 2024.
Bolo sniffing around. He's lost his boot, but kept his composure to ensure that the Swiss are off to a winning start at the Euro.
Mitchell starts, fulcrum to the back post. This is Gundogan! That's the goal Germany craved!
Oh, that's loose, and took it early, and scores a stunner! It's a Shaqiri special, and it's Scotland 1, Switzerland 1.
Yeah, the final matches in this group, and these are how things look going into the final set of group games. Germany are atop on 6 points. They're through, but they've not won the group yet. Switzerland are just behind them on 4. Scotland have that 1 point they picked up against Switzerland, and Hungary are yet to get off the mark. Chris, can you try and break down what everyone needs going into their final games?
Yeah, so you mentioned Germany there. They will win the group if they get a point or more. Switzerland are almost there. If they avoid defeat against Germany, then they will reach the last 16 definitely. Scotland can still finish second themselves. Hungary can't, but of course they could still finish as one of the best third ranked teams, and so could Scotland as well. So for all four nations, I think there is really something to play for. Two games which we know are going to be terrifically noisy in the stands, and I think they're going to be very entertaining and dramatic on the pitch as well.
Simultaneous kickoffs,
yes,
as well. One of them being in Frankfurt, as Switzerland take on the host Germany. Have had a perfect start, really. 5-1 win over Scotland, 2-0 win over Hungary. Doesn't get much better than that, Alvaro.
No, it doesn't. And I love the way they have played so far, especially the first game was beautiful. Maybe, you know, sometimes when you play the first game of your tournament at home, you can feel the pressure, but Germany didn't, and they played very positively. And one of the best things that, I said this last Saturday, but one of the best things that Nagelsmann has done with Germany, in my opinion, is separating Toni Kroos and Ilkay Gundogan around 30 meters on the pitch. Toni Kroos plays at the base, sometimes as a third center back in possession, just to play the ball from the back. And Ilkay Gundogan plays behind the striker. And, you know, both players have been terrific at their duty. Toni Kroos organizing, Ilkay Gundogan playing between the lines. And if you add to all that the skills of Florian Wirtz, the snake-type skills of Jamal Musiala, and then, you know, how good Germany has been so far in general as a team, you know, you have to praise them. They are the leaders of the tournament in possession, in goals scored, passing accuracy. They've been a joy to watch so far, and they have scored, I believe, that 7 goals in the tournament. So kudos to them, but this is not over yet, and they need a point to top the group.
Let's hear from Germany boss Julian Nagelsmann, who's prepared for a tough test.
I think when we watch the individuals of the Swiss team, I think it's toughest opponent. A lot of good players, good idea. They were not that stable over the 90 minutes in the two games before, but overall was deserved that they are now a good competitor against us to be also the first in our group. So we want to win this game and want to be the first.
So Alvaro mentioned it there. They're through, obviously, but have not won the group.
Mm-hmm.
You're playing every 3, 4, 5 days. It's an intense period of time. Kroos is not the youngest player anymore. Do you rotate? Will he rotate?
Well, I thought it was interesting. He was asked a number of questions about do you want to win the group. This wasn't a topic that he brought up himself. People then looking further down the line of who you might play in the quarterfinals, in particular Spain being potential. Who knows, though, I think. And he said this, I think it's difficult to tell your team we want to lose tomorrow. This is about winning the game, gaining more confidence, and it doesn't matter who the next opponent is. Hmm. Now, we'll find out when team news drops an hour, 75 minutes before. But I wonder with that comment that I don't think it will be full-scale rotation. And maybe, Alvaro, given, as you mentioned, that they seem to be really clicking, would it almost be a worry if you make too many changes because you might lose some of that cohesion and momentum?
Yeah, I think so. And I believe that on top of that, they have to get at least a point, and this is very important. So in some other games, I envisage some massive rotations, just thinking about the knockout round. But in this game in particular, I think that there will be a little bit of rotations, but not that many. And then we were joking before about Toni Kroos and saying, you know, he's got 5 games left in his career, at best. Are you going to prevent him from playing a 20% of those 5, which is not the next one?
Yeah.
I don't know about that. How happy is Toni Kroos going to be about it? We know Toni Kroos, he wants to play every game. But, you know, generally speaking, there have been a few players in the German squad that have shown that they've got the level to start. One of them being Niklas Füllkrug. Mm-hmm. I believe that with his goal against Scotland, he proved that he's ready. Leroy Sané, I think that he has tried, at least every time he's on the pitch, he's trying to shoot, he's trying to dribble. Maybe Jamal Musiala or Florian Wirtz can do with a little bit of a breaker as well. But I think that the rotations are not going to be massive, for that thing that, you know, we were speaking about. Chris quoted Nagelsmann, and that was very interesting.
I just checked. So Germany played Hungary on the 19th of June. If you're rotated and don't play at all, and they win the group, it's 10 days to play your next match. Is that a bit too much of a break?
Yeah, exactly. And interesting, we had Philipp Rober, our Germany reporter, on the show a couple of nights back. And he already at that stage was talking about this kind of tidal wave of emotion within Germany as well, which only builds.
Keeping that going.
Every positive result. Every time you go to a new city and you win there, suddenly everybody is behind you. So I think whoever he picks, he will have confidence in, obviously. But I would suggest that Julian Nagelsmann and Germany will be very keen to get 9 points and really fly into that last 16.
Let's get more from the Swiss cap now then, Germany's opposition, with our UEFA reporter Anna-Sophia Wollmerhausen, who joins the show. Anna-Sophia, thanks for coming on.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
First of all, can you speak to the derby nature of this fixture, neighbouring countries, Germany and Switzerland?
Yeah, it's obviously a big factor tomorrow. There's a good German word for it too, Nachbarschaftsduell, which literally just means a battle between neighbors.
That's a good one. We'll try and remember that one.
Easier for you to say than me, I think.
You can give it your best go as well. I don't know. It's a bit of a, maybe not like a heated rivalry when you think of it in that sense, but they're definitely, because they're so close to each other, you can definitely expect loads of fans to be here from Switzerland, especially. And I mean, when you're the smaller neighbor, you always love to annoy the bigger ones, I think.
And one of the people that you've been speaking to today is Brill Mbolo, who of course scored that goal on match day one. And we can hear a bit of that interview now.
It's the last group game. It's an important game for both teams because both can be first. And I think also the special thing that we are a little bit neighbor make it also special for the fans and around the world at home. So it's a little bit a kind of derby, if I can say this, but for us, it's about the 3 points to be ready and to make a good game, first of all.
So he is up for it, Anna Sofia. Any chance that he starts this game?
I think it's pretty likely. I mean, Germany obviously have a lot of height and physicality at centre-back with Tah and Rüdiger. And I think someone like Mbolo, who's obviously quite tall, a very physical presence, would do very well against them.
How much focus has there been on Jerdan Shaqiri after his brilliant goal against Scotland?
It obviously made all the headlines everywhere. It was all everyone could talk about. And I think also shows the importance that he has in the national team. He's obviously getting a bit older. Hearing from the head coach after the game, he wasn't surprised at all. He was very matter-of-fact to just say, yeah, he's got an excellent left foot. We know that he can do it. He's been a man that scored a lot of important goals and also a lot of memorable goals for Switzerland over the last years. He just always seems to manage to pull out his best when they need him. And so I think the reaction was not one of surprise, because everyone in Switzerland knows how good he is. More just, a bit of amazement at what we just saw and what he'd managed to do.
And finally, what would it mean to beat Germany and win a group for the first time?
It would obviously be a big achievement for them. The Swiss record against Germany overall is not the greatest. They have still managed to win one and draw twice in the last three games against them. So it's not out of the question for them to win tomorrow night. And I think obviously having the chance to finish top of the group at a Euro for the first time is more motivation on top. Not that they need any more, but they're through to the next round virtually already, you can say. But finishing top would obviously be a nice cherry on top for them.
Thanks for your time and your insights, Anna Sofia.
No problem. Thank you.
Our reporter with the Swiss national team, Anna Sofia Vollmerhausen. So that's Switzerland versus Germany done, still to come. We'll look ahead to the other game in the group, Scotland versus Hungary.
Cardiac arrest can happen to anyone, on a football pitch, at work, but most often at home.
CPR can save lives.
Get trained now.
Learn the skills to save lives. Visit get-train.com.
And a reminder, so we've had the second set of group games now. You can make not only substitutions, but you can make transfers ahead of that final group game. So get thinking about some of those injuries, some of the rotation we've been talking about. You might want to make your change on the Euro 2024 app,
which has everything you need to know for the tournament as well. Next then to this must-win game for both Scotland and Hungary in Stuttgart. Alvaro, it's hard to play down the importance of this for both these nations. It is massive, isn't it?
It is a massive game for both. Scotland has 1 point, Hungary 0 points. Both have to win, obviously. I will stick to one sentence from McGinn, the player from Aston Villa, the player from Scotland. He said, "I want to prove people wrong." I don't know if many people have been critical of Scotland or not, maybe after losing against Germany, but that feeling sometimes is a driving force, you know, finding an external factor, an external enemy that makes you fight stronger for the things you really want. So if that is the feeling in the camp, so be it. I believe that Scotland has a team with a lot of experience. McTominay, Hanley, McGregor, McGinn, Robertson, all of them have over 50 caps. In fact, Robertson has 73. So the experience is there. They know how to deal with these moments, but Hungary is not easy to beat. At the end of the day, they arrive in the tournament with a terrific record. They were unbeaten in the qualifying, and I know that in this tournament they have lost 2 games, but I do believe that Hungary is better than the numbers suggest.
The game at the Stuttgart Arena. Let's head to the south of Germany and join up with our Scotland reporter, Alex O'Henley. Alex, good evening.
Hi there. How are you doing, guys?
Very good. We know you've been speaking to the manager and John McGinn. We'll get to him as well shortly. But first of all, is there a more upbeat mood in the camp after the draw with Switzerland?
Almost definitely. We're fortunate enough. Our UEFA crew are living actually in the same hotel as the Scotland team, and we've been riding this roller coaster with them since the start. And there was all the euphoria in the build up to the Germany game, the opening match, and obviously the big letdown with that result. And then we got back on it again with the result against Switzerland, which was much more like it. And the players have taken a lot of confidence from that. There's the word momentum is being used quite a lot. And speaking to the likes of John and Kieran Tierney, who's no longer with the group, and others throughout the week, they feel that they are beginning to go back to the kind of form they showed in qualifying. And also, they are openly talking about the chance of making history for the first time getting a Scotland team out of the group stages into the knockout stages at a major finals. And they all individually want to be part of that group. They want to be that group of players who break through that glass ceiling and reach the knockout stages for the first time.
You mentioned there, Scotland without some really key players for this match. And you've been speaking to Steve Clarke about that and also the type of match he's expecting in Stuttgart. We can hear a bit of that interview now.
Yeah, when you look at both countries, the way they've evolved over the last 4 or 5 years, we're a head coach who has been by and large pretty loyal to the squad of players he's got. They've got a way of playing, we've got a way of playing. Similar systems, but not the same. So let's see what happens tomorrow night.
A blow to lose Kieran, obviously, in the build-up to this one, but you always say that the squad is your strength, so it's a chance for someone else to step in, and we're kind of fortunate that we have other left-sided defenders who can do that.
Oh, we're disappointed to lose Kieran. Obviously, we're disappointed to lose all the boys that have been injured for us, and we've got quite a lot of them. But I always say, when someone's injured, it's a chance for someone else to come in and make a name for themselves, so tomorrow night there'll be at least one coming in, and they've all got a chance to make a name for themselves, no matter how many I put in.
What would it mean to this group, Steve, who've been together for a while now with yourself, to take that step to progress beyond the group stages for the first time?
I haven't really thought about it too much. We're thinking only about performance. Can we get the win after that? Then we can congratulate yourself with that if that's what we get. But first of all, you have to focus on the performance. I think we focused a lot in the first game and then went out there and forgot to perform. So this time we just focus on the game and try to perform as best we can.
Well, you can hear the focus there in Steve Clarke's voice, Alex. In terms of recent footballing history for Scotland, how big is tomorrow's match?
Oh, yeah, this is massive. This is, they've had chances to progress before, but I think this time that it's just realistic for this group of players to take that next step, which, when you think back, all the great players that they've had over the years, Kenny Dalglish, Joe Jordan and others of that ilk who knocked on the door but couldn't take that step into the knockout stages, the door is there again for them. They're knocking on it. They just have to break it open, and there's a confidence. At the same time, there's a cautiousness because they know Hungary are a dangerous team. They need a victory as well. But certainly the feeling within the Scotland camp is that they're collectively, they're very tight as a group. They are together in this. Steve Clarke has been very loyal to this group, much like Marco Rossi has, as he touched on there. There's a lot of similarities between the two nations. But you just feel, having gained that point against Switzerland on Wednesday, that there's real momentum behind the Scots now. But they have to go and deliver. They have to go and do it on the pitch tomorrow.
And John McGinn, maybe you can fill us in on this, Alex, has been speaking about having Hungarian cousins.
Yeah, spoke to John earlier in the week and I knew this was a backstory that we wanted to revisit. And yes, he has two cousins, Tamas and Mark, his uncle. Joe married an Hungarian woman. They've moved over there. They spent their formative years in Scotland. One of them, he told me tonight, is going to give his allegiance to Hungary. The other one is going to give his allegiance to Scotland. So someone's going to be left unhappy come the end of the evening tomorrow night. But John is very proud of what they've done. They're actually decent young players. As he told me earlier this week, they've got that bit of McGinn tenacity about them. They're both midfielders. So, it's going to be an interesting one. He's had a message from them today, so I'm sure sure they'll be in touch again after the game tomorrow. John, incidentally, had 35 friends and members of his family. They're a big family. They were out for the first game against Germany. So I'm sure they'll be back for this one and they'll be hoping for a better outcome.
One Scotland supporter in Hungary, 100,000, we understand, in Stuttgart come kickoff. Alex, thank you very much for coming on the show.
You're welcome, guys. Thank you.
Thanks to our Scotland reporter, Alex O'Henley. We spoke about John McGinn there. Let's hear from him now on what qualification would mean to the Tartan Army.
That would mean everything, really, I think. You see the messages from the local mayors, the police officers, the residents, that it makes you proud to be Scottish, really proud to have them supporting us. So they've done their part of the journey and the job, and it's up to us to send them home with more memories, more unforgettable memories than I'm sure they've already made. So we can feel that. We really thank them for all the support. It's been absolutely incredible.
Yeah, they've had some famous wins, notably in qualifying, of course, as well. But they play a Hungary side that have lost their two opening games. They went into this championship 14 unbeaten as well, Chris.
Yeah, and I think in the second half on match day one against Switzerland, we saw what they're all about. And then at times against Germany, they were beaten 2-0, but they caused Germany big problems. And interesting from Marco Rossi talking about how both teams are under the same pressure. I mean, this is winner takes all, quite literally. How easy will it be for the Hungary players, I guess for the Scotland players as well, but to play with the freedom, follow the tactics, given just what is on the line for them?
I think that, there is an element of passion that you shouldn't water down as a manager, really. And Scotland and Hungary probably have that hunger and that feeling that they have to go at it. And, maybe it's not the time for a lot of tactical instructions right now, but let the players play with a little bit of guts as well. And I believe that Scotland and Hungary can do it. I said before that the Scottish experience is very impressive. I mean, Robertson, 73 caps, McTominay, 51, McTominay, by the way, has been scoring so many goals for Scotland over the last year that, for me, he's one of the key players of this game. But when it comes to the Hungarians, look, there are positives to take. For example, part of the game against Germany was good, was decent, definitely. And they were much better against Germany than Scotland was. And then in the second half against Switzerland, they played better than in the first half. They managed to release the pressure better. They managed to play from, these quick passes to trigger a counter-attack very well. I think the goalkeeper Gulaksi is one of the good goalkeepers of the Euro. Then Soboslai's energy and crossing is very good. Kim and Sobot are the two fastest players in the team, so they can run. They can definitely take on somebody. And then in the second half, Hungary resorts to this old-fashioned striker like Adam, who is a great target man, and he has shown that he can also compromise centre-backs very well. So, of course, I think that Scotland, after the point they got in the last game, they have to come out slightly as favourites for the point they got and all that. But Hungary is going to be quite dangerous too.
Let's hear from their camp now, as Attila Salai explains what will be key in this game.
It's a huge game for us. We think it's like a final, because it's our last chance to get the 3 points and somehow qualify to the further rounds. But of course, we know that the Scottish team has the same situation. They want to win as well, and they are a really hard worker team like us. So it will be a huge game tomorrow for sure, with a lot of efforts from both teams, a lot of physical duels, a lot of running. We want to stay as compact as possible, and then use our fast and skillful players in counter-attack. But we knew as well that Scotland has these abilities too, to defend all together, and they are really dangerous also from set pieces. So we will be really, really careful about these situations.
Yeah, Scotland against Hungary on Sunday. Let's switch things back to Saturday, Euro 2024, Chris.
Yep, and three games we had. It's actually the last of the 3 p.m. kickoffs, would you believe? They've absolutely raced by. Finished Georgia 1, Czechia 1, Turkey 0, Portugal 3, and Belgium 2, Romania 0.
Well, we can now hear from Jeremy Doku about his performance tonight.
Yeah, it was a nice game. A lot of intensity from the start. It was not easy. We scored a goal quick, very quick in the game. And then we had a lot of chances. A little bit of a pity that we didn't score a little bit more. I think we had some chances that we could have scored. But overall, it was a good game, and we're happy with the performance. Of course, I always told everyone that I prefer the left wing. But if I have to play on the right wing, I would try to do my best. But obviously today I felt good and I'm happy with the performance.
Jeremy Doku's thoughts on the night's action. Of course, we've asked for you for your thoughts on X using @Euro2024.
Yeah, loads of you getting in touch. Annie says this, it's going to be a very crazy final round. We are ready. I totally agree with that. Muller says CR7 is happy.
Muller? Thomas Muller.
All of the world is happy. Well, certainly all of Portugal is happy. And Bruce says the goalkeeper of Georgia is the real hero of this match. Congratulations to him with the first ever point at a Euro. He was magnificent.
What a brilliant place to leave it. One last question to you, Alvaro Romeo. Is Spain going to win Euro 2024?
I think so, yeah.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to say yes. No, because
you've been impressed, yeah?
I was very impressed. To be honest with you, I know that many sides will believe that they can win the tournament. But what I saw the other day against Italy was very special. So I'm going to say yes. Yes, I'm going to be driven a little bit by the passion of what I saw a couple of days ago. And I believe that this team is ready to win a Euro for the first time in, what is it, 12 years now.
Very exciting.
Yeah.
We will find out over the next 3 weeks. Thanks for listening. We're on air every match night, moments after the final game, on the Euro 2024 app and, of course, at Euro2024.com around 11 p.m. CEST. And the show also available as the official podcast. Please subscribe using your favourite podcast provider.
And a reminder, we'll be back on Sunday night as Group A concludes. There's no early afternoon matches. Both of them will kick off at 9 p.m. local time as the hosts, Germany, look to win the group, facing Switzerland, and Scotland take on Hungary in that huge encounter. From Chris, me, Rob Daly and Alvaro Romeo, goodbye for now.
Thank you for listening to the official Euro 2024 podcast, an IMG production for UEFA.